And welcome into the Drew Buzney Show on this what has become rainy Tuesday in Schenectady, New York. No intro today. We await the highly anticipated Kristaps Porzingis injury news. He left the game right around halftime yesterday in the Celtics blowout Game 4 win. Our reactions to that game, our reactions to the Bruins game, and look ahead for their game tonight. Patriots draft takeaways and our second big golf debate. That's all on the Drew Buzney Show. I'll see you in a minute as we wait the Kristaps Porzingis injury news. Let's hope and pray it's not an Achilles tear, but we're following it live, so stick around. And welcome back in. We're about 60 seconds away from what we think will be the first injury report. The 5 o'clock report the day before the games is what is required of all basketball teams to list who is questionable, who is doubtful, who is available, and who is out. And because Kristaps Porzingis got injured last night, that is where the whole Celtics fan base, the whole media is looking right now. I have it up on my computer. I'm refreshing like crazy. So we just hope and pray that it comes out in just under a minute now. It is 4:59. We started early today for this reason. But it was interesting. Kristaps Porzingis on back-to-back possessions yesterday. It seemed like the first possession of this sequence was he rolled his ankle, and I believe it was his right ankle. And then the next position, that was in the paint. And then the next possession, he was up by the three-point line on the left side, kind of at 2 o'clock if you're looking at it. From behind the hoop. And he just looked like he tweaked his calf. And initial reports were an Achilles tear. That doesn't seem like the case. So we're waiting for the official report as just now it hits 5 o'clock and yet nothing has come out. So we will keep refreshing and hoping and praying for some good news as we go onto Twitter and we look. And nothing so far, so we'll just continue to talk about it. A little weird being live and doing this, but we just hope and pray that everything's okay because, you know, the Eastern Conference, it's riddled with injuries. Right now, the Orlando Magic is the only team that's had all their starters healthy. You know, you see Giannis out, Bogdanovic out for the Knicks, Rando out for the Knicks, Damian Lillard out for the Bucks. You know, every team has injuries. You know, Joel Embiid is not healthy. So the more the Celtics can stay healthy, and already with a conference that I feel the Celtics can win, even though last night, even with the win, brought me a little bit of concern. But I feel like if we play to our best, the Celtics can do this. So we just hope and pray. I know I keep saying it, but you know it's 5:01, so we refresh again. And here we go. Chris Haynes reporting Boston Celtics center Kristaps Porzingis. Right soleus strain is out for Game 5 Wednesday night. That means he will not play. Not really sure what the injury they are citing is. I'm not really a doctor. It's a calf. It is a calf strain. So Kristaps Porzingis out with a calf strain. So not the end of the world. Calf strain. Maybe he's out maybe a week or two. But at best case scenario, we win tomorrow night. We have a couple days off with the Cleveland Cavs and the Orlando Magic game being tied at 2. That game is at least going, you know, 2 more games, at least going 6. So that's four more days it could go. So, you know, if we can lock down the business and get the win tomorrow night at home, it gives maybe a little more than a week for Porzingis to heal. So that's best case scenario that we heard today. It's so glad that it's not an Achilles injury. So now that that's out of the way and, you know, we can breathe this sense of relief, let's just talk about the game yesterday. And yes, it was a win. Yes, it was a blowout win. And other than that loss against in Game 2, it's felt like the same type of game, Games 1, 3, and 4 for the Celtics. And yes, a win is a win. And we're up 3-1 in the series. But I'm not convinced that once you make it past the Heat, you know, the Knicks are going to be easy for us to get out of the way. Or even the Magic or the Cavaliers. Keep trying to say Cleveland Guardians, but it's basketball we're talking about. I'm not so sure we can just steamroll them like everyone is thinking we are. And yes, we were up a lot against the Heat. And if you're looking at the scoreboard, it was just a great game. If that's all you want to focus on, you think, oh, the Celtics are playing unbelievable. You know, they held them under 90 points for 2 games in a row in Miami while on the road. But if you zoom out and you look at the perspective, first of all, in the three-in-a-row series, the past 3 years that we've had against the Heat, the road team always wins. You know, that's became the norm recently. And if you look at the injury stat line, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown played horrendously. Like, some of the worst basketball I've ever seen. And for people that are the highest-played basketball players in the playoff, in the whole NBA, playing like that in the playoffs against a team where you should steamroll is unexcusable. There were just so many shots that star players need to hit. You know, we have a chance to, we're up 15, to push it to 25, really put the game away, rest our players. And that seems to never be the case with this team. And the only consistency between, you know, what it's been 5 years where we always have this problem. We know we're winning, and at the end of the game, we kind of let them get back in it. When we have the chance to, you know, go full steam ahead and blow them out, we can't capitalize. You know, our, if we're thinking about a gas pedal, you know, the foot is halfway down, and we have the chance to go full throttle and, you know, wipe them off the floor, and the brake pedal gets pushed, or something happens, and there's a turn, and you have to take off the gas pedal. And that seems what happens really recently when we have these big games. And I mentioned this consistency. The only thing that's the same is Tatum and Brown. They're the only two players that have been through Brad Stevens, Ime Udoka, Joe Mazzulla, and this has been the problem the whole time. So it's not the coach. It's these two star players who seemingly can't put games away. And I was talking to my dad the other day, and we were talking about, you know, these opinions that people should have, but they don't. And he mentioned to me that Jason Tatum being a clutch player, as everyone thinks he is, but he's really not. Because you look at the stats in the playoffs, the stats back him up as a clutch player. But if you're actually a fan and you actually watch, there's pivotal moments where, you know, it may not be with 5 minutes to go, maybe in the second quarter, but you can call them clutch moments because it could really put the game away, even that early in the game, and he doesn't capitalize. And it's year after year after year that this happens, and people just don't want to believe it. They're stuck up, or something's going on where they want this belief that Jason Tatum is this playoff clutch player who they call him Playoff Tatum. But he's really not. He's really not someone that I would trust to lead a team in the playoffs. Thank God we have Derek White. Because, boy, Derek White has showed time and time again where he can step up as a clutch player. I'm not saying it's every time, because he's not the best player on the team. But every once in a while, he shows up where we need it, and he showed up last night. But as a star player with Tatum and Brown, they really have to show up every time. It's no excuse to bat 300 in clutch games. You know, every 3 out of 10 games, if you get my baseball reference there, they show up. And, you know, the rest of 7 times, they make a doo-doo in the bag. I can't swear on there, but you know what I'm getting at. They make a little doo-doo in their diaper. And it's just enough is enough. Like, you get this feeling that you're mad and happy at the same time. Yes, they won. Yes, they played well, but we're not playing up to our fullest potential, especially Tatum and Brown. And I know Porzingis just got hurt, and I don't want to, you know, rub salt on the wound, but before he got hurt, playing terrible. No wonder he's never really became the star player. He doesn't have playoff experience, and it shows. There's just shots he takes, and I'm not a big fan of the pull-up threes where the defender is right on you or from the free-throw line, that contested shot he just takes because he's 7 feet. I'm not a big fan. I don't think that's good offense. I think the offense is very one-sided, and, you know, one player gets the ball, they try and do what they can, and if they fail, they pass it on, the next person makes their attempt. It's just 5 attempts to go one-on-one. It's not a cohesive team that's playing right now. It's selfishness. And yes, it wins because we have 5 really good players who, you know, can play one-on-one, but that's not the goal of this team. It's a team. T-E-A-M. And I know everyone says there's no I in team, and it's true. Because the game, basketball teams are not great when they play one-on-one. They're great when they play as, you know, 5 giant. It's, if you ever think of something, there's 5 superheroes. I forget what show it was, but I watched it when I was a kid, and they all, when they need it most, they combine into this one superhero where they each control a different part of this, like, superhuman body, and they work together to beat the villain. And I know it's a weird analogy, and it's really strange to hear coming from me, but it's honestly what the Celtics need to do. Right now, their players are all operating off of, like, their own entities, their own basketball entities, where they think that they're just like employees to this team, where they do their own thing and it's going to be okay. But no, they got to join forces. They got to, you know, be this giant superhero and all operate different parts of the ball. You know, someone needs to drive kicks. Someone needs to be the sharp shooter. And it's cohesiveness that they're missing. And yes, they won, they blew them out, but with this cohesiveness, I mean, it's not a 20-point win. It's a 50, 60-point win, because when five superstar players that we have work together as a team, that brings out the best of everyone. And when the best of everyone's out, no one could stop this Celtics team. And so that's what I'm looking for. Yes, I'm great. It's great we won, but by no means are we playing to the absolute best we can. And it worries me, because this one-on-one mentality, it obviously, as it's shown time and time again, it doesn't work in the clutch, right? When you need a ball movement, when the defense is much more, you know, pressing and physical than it was for the first 45 minutes of the game. The last 3 minutes of the game is really where this team ball needs to come in. You know, get the defense moving, get the open shot. Don't force a layup or force a step back that, you know, you see Brad and Tatum do a lot. And so, yes, you know, there can be moments of one-on-one. If a player's hot, Derek White was hot yesterday. He said himself he took some dumb shots, but he had the green light because he was going off. But I'm saying, when time matters and you need to get in your rhythm, it's when the cohesiveness needs to shown. And so far, they haven't proved it to me. And so once I see that, I'll be convinced, you know, I wouldn't be as worried. But right now, I'm worried. Right now, I'm worried. You know, the Celtics had the 3-1 lead, and another Boston team in the playoffs has a 3-1 lead. And I'm worried again. I'm not just saying this to, you know, to play devil's advocate. I'm actually worried about the Bruins. Because if you just go back literally a year ago today, the Bruins, you know, as the one seed back then and the best team ever in the NHL, they were playing the Florida Panthers. They had a 3-1 lead, basically the same thing. I think they won game one, lost game two. I think won games 3 and 4. So the same thing they did against the Maple Leafs as the 2 seed this year. And they have a 3-1 lead again. And, you know, if history's any indication of what's going to happen in the present, if you use the past to deduce the present as, you know, you do in history, the Celtics are going to blow a lead. And yes, there's different things. Yes, it's a different team, and we've kind of gone away from the alternating goaltending because Swayman has played the last couple of days, which is the right choice by Jim Montgomery, because he is the better playing goalie, not just in general, but against the Toronto Maple Leafs, our opponent right now. So he's the choice. He's a brick wall right now. He's 6-0, maybe I think 7-0 now on the season against the team. So he's your goalie. He's the right choice. So there's no, you know, questioning, wondering if this is the right choice, which there was last year, because we got to game 7 and it was, do we stick with Ullmark, who's been playing okay? Do we go to Swayman, who hasn't really played in the playoffs? You know, doesn't have that much playoff experience. Do we just jump ship to him? And so the big difference this year is the goaltenders. I mean, we know Swayman's our goaltender. He should have been played all 5 games. The series probably should be over by now if Ullmark didn't play game 2. But we know our goaltender's unbelievable right now. We know he will give us a chance to win. So I'm worried, but I would say it's a little bit less worried than I would have if Allmark's the goalie and we're still alternating, just because I have more trust that our defense is going to be good. I don't really know what else to say other than it just feels like we're back in the same situation. And I think tonight's game tips 7 o'clock on ESPN, or puck drop 7 o'clock on ESPN at home. I just think we have to win this game. I just feel like if we lose this game, it goes back 3-2 to Toronto. I just think, especially for the players that were here last year, you know, the same disbelief I might be feeling right now could creep into their minds. And the minute it becomes a mind game and you're fighting not just your mind, but the other team, it all goes downhill. So, huge game, must-win game. Just to put this series away, especially in hockey, where, you know, you're on your legs for 2 months straight trying to win the cup, any rest is great. Especially that the other series are also, you know, 3-1 and all, pretty much over. So going longer only hurts us. Fatigue, both in basketball and hockey, is important. And I know this probably shouldn't be the last thing out of the Boston sports that we talk about today, but we will talk about the Patriots draft right now. Selecting Drake May, Javon Baker, Polk, and a couple offensive linemen. And I think, honestly, ESPN graded an A-, and I totally agree. I think it was an A- draft. I wouldn't say it was the best. I wish we were able to somehow trade with the Bills and get that last pick in the first round and take Coleman from Florida State. I believe he is a great wide receiver. But I think we got some dogs in Javon Baker and Polk. I don't know if you saw it, but Baker came out after he was drafted and said he's going to make people in wheelchairs stand up at Gillette Stadium, which I think is what we need. I think he's used to playing with the Drake May Tiles quarterbacks. And I think bringing in this fresh wide receiver core, this fresh quarterback, is everything good. Because I don't think, like, the names look good, the one we had before the draft in the wide receiver room, but they've shown the past couple years that they are not superstars anymore. They're kind of just helping pieces. So I think if these two new wideouts can come in and, you know, be the superstars, the threats we need, I think everything's going to be good. It was interesting, though. I watched the Pat McAfee Show podcast, and on that was Bill Belichick. And I honestly was a little pissed at him. I felt like when Drake May was picked, he was much more negative about him than any other quarterback, especially Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams. And I mean, it's right. I mean, I just think he was nitpicky because maybe he's a little jealous that he got ousted. May not have been his fault, but I think he was a little pissed off. And probably he would have traded back. I mean, I think you could have traded back a little bit. I don't think the Cardinals, who had the pick behind us, were ever going to take a quarterback. I don't think the Giants were ever even going to take Drake May. I don't think the Chargers were ever going to take a quarterback. So if you wanted to risk it, honestly, the Patriots could have traded back to maybe 8 or 9, which I think Bill Belichick would have done. And I think he said that on the show, that he probably would have traded back, because I think Drake May was on our board and really no one else's board. You know, if I'm wrong, just email me and let me know I'm wrong. I'm not the biggest expert in the draft, but that's what my initial thoughts were. So maybe we could have gotten maybe another second or a third and got another wide receiver. I think there were a lot more on the board. But overall, I'm happy with this draft. The question now becomes, as we get into these training camps, the rookie training camp, you know, who starts, Brissett or May? I mean, I hope it's just entertaining. I don't really know. I think rushing Drake May into it when he still doesn't really have the fundamentals, and I mean, he doesn't have the greatest footwork, he bails out of the pocket too easily or too fast, doesn't make the right reads all the time, and doesn't have defenses and also who's open. So honestly, I think him just gaining more of these fundamentals, expertise, especially with, you know, offensive staff that we brought in that is quarterback focused and is really good at developing quarterbacks. They helped develop Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love. Worked a lot with Jacoby Brissett last year, so I think he'll get off to a good start. So I don't see the problem with going with Jacoby Brissett right off the bat. I think he's used to the coaching staff, so I don't think it will be a problem. And I think nothing helps more than Drake May just getting experience, you know, the day-to-day life without playing, you know, how you watch film, how you practice, you know, just being competitive to Jacoby Brissett. So if in case he gets hurt, he can go in. But I don't think Drake May should be the starter right off the bat, because I just think he's too much of a raw talent. I think he was a good pick because he has the most raw talent, so he's the best. Yeah, I think he's the best chance to get into this, make him a really good player. Because you have so much to work with and you can fix so much and, you know, really mold him to what a great quarterback should be. So I don't think he should be the day one starter. I think he has some work to do. But I think the coaches we brought in, and Alex Van Pelt and Ben McAdoo, they are the best options for Drake May to have, you know, to do what he's got to do and, you know, make himself better and into that starting caliber quarterback. Because he's good. Don't get me wrong. He's a great football player. I don't think he's starting caliber yet. I think he has a lot to work on, as I've said. So I think, you know, all the pieces are around him to help. I think it's in a good spot. The wide receivers can start right away, get them some experience. And the minute Jacoby Brissett goes bad and doesn't start playing well, you put in Drake May. So I think that's the way it's got to go. But, you know, we got a little bit of a ways to go. We have some more information we got to figure out, you know, once these practices start. So that we'll bring this back up again in later shows. Now that I mentioned, the show is pretty much going to be the same throughout the rest of the year. We have about 5 more shows left. Every week, it's just going to be talking about Celtics, Bruins, Patriots. And we'll try and throw in some sports stories. We'll get back to it, some golf talk. But now that I mentioned golf, we are going to end today with our second golf debate. We had one that lasted actually 2 or 3 shows a couple weeks ago. I really enjoyed talking about it, so we're going to bring one back. We got a great one up next on the Drew Buzney Show. Again, you are listening to WRUC 89.7, the first station in the nation, live from beautiful Union College in Schenectady, New York. As always, I'm your host, Drew Buzney, live with you every Tuesday on the Drew Buzney Show. Thank you very much for listening here on the podcasts. We have a great debate coming up next. So if you don't recall, a couple weeks ago, we talked the PGA Tour debate about Scottie Scheffler and his dominance. That led into the Masters week. And I was watching the PGA Tour. I was also watching LIV Golf Australia this week and just seeing the scenes at the end of that. And if you don't know, LIV Golf operates off of a team format. So there's a team ward, you know, whoever has the lowest score to par, and then there's individual ward. And the individual ward was locked up. I believe basically after 17 holes, he knew it was over. But after the 54-hole golf tournament, two teams were tied. And the way it worked there was a two-man best ball. So two players played. They took their best scores. It actually went to two playoff holes. And it honestly felt like a Ryder Cup. It felt like, well, I think it was because one of the teams has a lot of Australians, and it was an Australian. The other team, you know, was an Australian. So the fans were obviously rooting for one team over the other. So it kind of felt like it was a Ryder Cup either in US or Europe. And it was really cool scenes. But I don't know if I can contribute it just to the team format. I think it's the location. I think it's the fact that LIV Golf does something the PGA Tour doesn't do. And that is travel the world. PGA Tour, with the exception of, I believe it's four events, maybe I think one in Mexico, couple international ones in the UK and Scotland maybe. Other than that, they're pretty based in like four states, Florida, California, Texas, with a couple other ones in California, Georgia, New York, and so forth. But they're really housed in three states, and it feels like they're missing an opportunity to go international. I don't think golf is just an American game. I think it's a world game. And there's these crowds that, you know, you could tap into that have never really had a PGA Tour event. I mean, LIV Golf goes to Singapore, China, Spain, Australia. And yes, there's tours that do that. There's the DP World Tour and the Asian Tour. But those aren't as big as the PGA Tour. I mean, the PGA Tour is the most well-known tour. So if a PGA Tour has an event there, they have an event in Japan, but if they go to these other places that maybe just one year, maybe they go to Australia, I think they could tap into this market where they're not just having American viewers, they're having international viewers. And yes, they might get in the open when they play in Scotland and the UK, but I think there's a schedule aspect they could work in. And always think about the schedule, I think it's terrible. I'm just going to come out and say it. Because of LIV, the PGA Tour implemented signature events where it's this top 70 players. They play either a cut or no cut event. But the way they scheduled it is a lot of times it comes before and after a major. So the best players in the world are playing elevated event, major, elevated event, 3 weeks in a row. And yes, that's the best players, but you look at the worst players who in that time don't play for 3 weeks in a row. If they're not into the elevated event and they don't have an alternate event that the PGA Tour hosts, they're not in the major and not into the next elevated event. So, you know, they either play one or zero events. Zero if there's no alternate event, or if there is one. Like the Puerto Rico Open a couple weeks ago, that rivaled Bay Hill and the Honor Pump Classic, another elevated event. And yes, we want to focus on the best players and we don't want to leave out the bums, but there's all these weeks now, like this week, CJ Cup, Byron Nelson, that I think the best player is Jordan Spieth, and there's no one else that's good. Because we force all these best players to play only these weeks, they have to play a week, if it's 50-week schedule, everyone has to play, you know, week 2, 7, 10, 12, 21, 22. They have to play these 12 events, give or take. I'm making up these numbers. Then the other 38 events, they don't have to play, and most times they don't. And so you have 12 really, really good events, and maybe out of the 38, you have 30 terrible events, and then you have 8 events that are pretty good because maybe a couple of the best players join. Maybe you have 2 or 3 compared to 70 of the best players. And yes, something I like about the PGA Tour over LIV is they have more golf tournaments. So every week you can sit down and you can watch golf. Now, though, on most weeks you sit down and you watch golf, and yes, you love the game, so it's fun to watch, but you don't know anyone on the leaderboard. And I want to know people. When you watch LIV, and yes, they play maybe once a month, maybe twice a month, when you see the leaderboard, you know everybody. And yes, it doesn't happen so often, but you know every time you turn on LIV Golf, you'll see the players you want to see. When you watch the PGA Tour, when you turn it on, you have no idea if you're going to see Scottie Scheffler or the 1,000th ranked player in the world. You just don't know because there's so many events and not everyone can play everything like you can in LIV. You have this whole range of viewership. You have the times that you get to see the best players, and then you have the times where, you know, you see the nobodies. And I'm not saying the PGA Tour should go away from this year-long schedule, because I like watching golf, you know, basically most weeks from January to December. But I think it has to be a case where maybe 1 month, you know, in this major season, these 4 months, you know, the spring and summer, you play every day, every week during the month. And You know, you try to have your best players play two or three times, and, you know, they need their rest because majors take a lot out of you and you have the elevated events. And so maybe they take 1 week off. Maybe you go elevated event, major, week off, elevated event. And then maybe it's another week off and a major, elevated event, week off. Or something like that where, you know, the elevated events are near the majors, but it's not playing 3 weeks in a row. Maybe it's 2 week off event. Maybe it's a two then lower level events and they choose one or two. So, you know, for that, whatever, that 7 weeks, you know, at least for five of them, four of them, you have the best players. And out of the two or three remaining, you know, maybe you have half of, you'll get half in each, half of the best player pool in each. And then when you're out of the major season, they don't really need to play every week. Because out of the major season, it takes a lot out of you. You know, you have the FedEx Cup playoffs. I mean, I would love to see them, the PGA Tour, do less events and kind of what the shoulder season is. You know, before the players, when they're in their California Tour, and maybe after the Open, before the FedEx Cup playoffs. Because I think if you had less events, let's say those are 2 6-week spans. If you host 3 or 4 events, I think you could get all the best players to go to them. If you have 6 events, maybe 2 of the events have the best players in them by luck. So I'm going to think about it more. I would love to hear everyone's opinions, but I think the schedule needs tweaking for just a different organization of the way the events are. I think the majors are in perfect spots, but I don't think the elevated events are. And I think we can do more to get to that live golf model of best players every time you can watch it on TV. So more thinking to come from that. But other than that, I thank you very much for watching the Drew Busney Show. We'll be back. We'll continue this debate next week. We'll talk about the Celtic Bruins. Hopefully by this time next week, we're talking and previewing round 2. Thank you again for watching. Have a great rest of your day.